Holy cow, the years just keep sliding by, don't they? How is it March already? But it's not too late to change your life this year. If you're still not in a job you love, stop messing around. Go to mycomputercareer.edu and take the free career evaluation today. You could start your new life as an information technology professional in as little as 4 months, even with zero IT experience. Helping people start an IT career is what we do. Many of our graduates could do little more than turn their computers on and off before they started. Attend classes on campus or live online just twice a week to get the skills and certifications you'll need to start your new career. More than just a school, My Computer Career helps you get into the industry by working with hundreds of employers that hire our students. My Computer Career is nationally accredited and financial aid is available to those who qualify, including the GI Bill. Classes start soon, so go take the free career evaluation today at mycomputercareer.edu. It's not rocket science, it's mycomputercareer.edu. The First Take Your Take podcast is presented by Capital One. This is Banking Reimagined. The Astros have spoken. Houston Astros players Alex Bregman and Jose Altuve on Thursday apologized in brief statements for their roles in the team's sign-stealing scheme in 2017. The players made available at a news conference at the Astros open spring training in West Palm Beach, Florida. Here's a little of what Bregman had to say.
I have some brief remarks that I'd like to share with y'all. I am really sorry about the choices that were made by my team, by the organization, and by me. I have learned from this, and I hope to regain the trust of baseball fans. I would also like to thank the Astros fans for all of their support. We as a team are totally focused on moving forward to the 2020 season. Thank you.
Golly gee, guys, he's sorry and he means it, even though nobody's answered any real questions. In the meantime, the next headline you need, former NFL quarterback Colin Kaepernick will release a memoir sometime this year through a company he's founded called Kaepernick Publishing. Audible will release an audio version of the memoir. His quote, "I want to tell the story of my evolution and the events that led me to protest systematic oppression in hopes that it will inspire others to rise in action," in a statement Kaepernick made on Thursday. And last but not least, Phoenix Suns guard Devin Booker will replace the injured Damian Lillard in this weekend's NBA All-Star Game and three-point contest. The NBA named Booker as Lillard's replacement Thursday, one day after the Trailblazers star suffered a right groin strain. Booker's 23. He'll make his first All-Star appearance in his fifth season. Those are the headlines you need to know. It's a little bit of Straight Talk. Straight Talk has the full court cell phone coverage you need. Get the unlimited plan with 25 gigs of high-speed data, then 2G for just $45 a month, saving you up to half the cost of the big savers, of the big carriers. Everything for less. Savings may vary. See terms and conditions at straighttalk.com. It's First Take Your Take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and of course ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. And you guys get to join us with your take on the Shell Penzo Performance Line. We're asking you. First Take today's in Chicago. They're going to be in Chicago again tomorrow. Golic and Wingo are going to be in Chicago. We're all getting ready for the NBA All-Star Game. We're watching the year of the dynamic duo. In honor of that, our question to you, who's the best duo in NBA history? Not now. All right. I'm talking about history. So this is finally your chance to debate Shaq and Kobe versus Michael and Scotty. I cannot believe the debates we've already had on this. ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive Insurance drivers who switch and save pay an average of $796 less per year. Call or click today. Find out if we could save you hundreds on your car insurance. Don't forget, your take means not only do you give us your take, you can tweet me at Jason Fitz. You can call 888-SAY-ESPN 888-729-3776. I don't just want to know who. I also need to know why. Be ready to make your argument. We'll get some of your take worked in. And all of this duo conversation leads us, of course, to LeBron James and Anthony Davis. Obviously, they are the duo that's moving the Lakers ahead. The question is, are they enough to get the Lakers to the finals? So, Basketball Hall of Famer Isaiah Thomas joined Max and Stephen A. live from Chicago to break it all down.
I had the Lakers going to the finals. Because I said those dynamic duo, that those two guys, LeBron and AD, are two of the top five players on the planet Earth. And if they bring their game, they should be able to do it. Now, the other day, when you saw me on TV, you saw me sit up there and do my Austin Powers, you know, all of that other stuff. Why? Because the Clippers got Marcus Morris. That's an additional defender on LeBron James. So the path to the finals seems that much more daunting. I don't think that, the Clippers from top to bottom, I believe an argument could be made. They're the better team. Mm-hmm. My only point is the reason why I don't have to completely deviate from my position is because it goes back to what I said from day one. Anthony Davis and LeBron James are two of the top five players on the planet Earth. If they bring their A game in the sport of basketball, when you have two superstars that play like superstars, I'm sorry, that can be enough to get it done. There's a lot of questions about the Lakers right now because we're questioning 35 years of age, 17th year in the league, and a part of LeBron James along with a four-headed monster in L.A., right there in L.A. with the Clippers, who could assist in guarding him. In the case of Anthony Davis, we had him right here on First Take, and we were talking about how cats were looking at him because I had guys on the Clippers say to me, we got five dogs. This is before they acquired Marcus Morris. We got five dogs. They might only have one. Okay, so that's what they were saying. But the point is, with all of that being said, Anthony Davis, why are they not calling him that? Because they know he's an all-world talent, but they believe they could compromise him if they get physical with him, which brings us back to my original point. If he plays like an all-world player and LeBron plays like an all-world player in the sport of basketball, that should be enough to get you to the final.
They have two top five players, no excuses. And I'm a Lakers fan, by the way. Can we talk about the Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Chicago Bulls for a second? Let me tell you why it's not going to be enough for the Lakers this year. Because as much as people, and we're talking to one of the all-time greats right here in Isaiah Thomas, as much as people always try to make it about the point guard and the big in the NBA and throughout history, what brings you success? The most success any team has ever had is the Chicago Bulls, Jordan, Pippen, dynasty. And when you look at that dynasty, it was two attack dogs, perimeter guys who could defend and score, who could shoot and take it to the hole, who had an overall game. Two of them. 6'6", 6'8". That is the formula. So you can tell me about Patrick Beverley, who's tremendous. Love Patrick Beverley. Lou Williams, when you talk about dogs, he's a dog on offense. You usually think about defense. He's a dog on offense. You can talk about Doc Rivers and coaching and all these things with the Clippers. But they have Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. It's the closest thing the league has seen to two perimeter guys like that since Jordan and Pippen. And Kawhi elevates under pressure. He's the guy, when the chips are on the line, Isaiah, you can talk about this because you were a chips on the line type player. The Greek Freak gets shut down. Who do you want? The shot against Philadelphia gets made. Who do you want? Put him up against Kawhi with the chips on the line. It's not going to go good.
Teach him, Isaiah.
And both of you are kind of right. But where I see the Clippers having a really distinct advantage at is because of their identity, their defensive identity that they've yet to develop, but at least they know exactly what they want to be. I think the Lakers are still a work in progress. They're talented enough to win, but I still think they're a work in progress. I don't think that they've really solidified who they are, what they want to be. I know they want to be champions, but when I look at the Clippers, I see a game plan in terms of behind the bench with Doc Rivers, trying to instill that mentality of toughness, defense wins championships, so forth and so on. I do believe their offense will kick in, but at the end of the day, I, like you, believe that the Clippers have the most talented roster. Yeah. I think the Lakers right now are still trying to find that toughness, that person who's going to bring them that type of toughness. I look at LeBron, I look at AD. Clearly, they're the best players, talent for talent. But when you look at their toughness and their identity, I don't think the Lakers have really developed their identity.
That's why I like the Clippers from the beginning of the season, because when you try to throw it together and you have to push all your resources into the chips,
well, they're both throwing it together
to get AD, and you bring these new guys together, it takes like a season or two to get the details right, the role players, to figure out what you're doing. The Clippers won 48 games and then just dropped Kawhi and Paul George on the team. They won 48 games last year with Patrick Beverley and those guys and Doc Rivers as the coach. How are you going to add the finals MVP and a guy who was in the MVP conversation to a 48-win team and expect another team to win?
Let me answer that question. Here's what I think you're missing. When you look at the Los Angeles Clippers, yes, you are dropping those guys into it. But there's a lot for them to figure out as well because you have two additional bodies that you have to appease. Now, defensively, they're going to come together. But offensively, you know what? You got to do that as well. Plus, you've got the load management issue, and you're talking about chemistry, camaraderie, all of those kind of things. You got to work that way. In the case of the Los Angeles Lakers, what you do, you dropped Anthony Davis into the mix. Yeah. It's just that simple. So it's not that complicated for them. Here's where it gets complicated for the Los Angeles Lakers. When LeBron James is in a game, their offense is fluid and elite. LeBron James has the ball in his hands. You're running your pick and roll. Frank Vogel is accustomed to coaching that, and they look sublime. Here's the problem. The second he goes out of the game, who do you have?
Which is
why everybody was talking about Rajon Rondo or Schrader for the Oklahoma City, how you needed to get one of those guys. You didn't do that. Then you were praying that Derrick Rose and Dennis Schrader. And then not only that, you was hoping to get Darren Collison. He elects not to come out of retirement. So now what we have is a situation is with LeBron, with AD, you know who is the key guy for the Lakers? Rajon Rondo, yeah. Because when he comes off the bench, he has to be able to give you something.
No, there's
from
more,
the point
Stephen
ball
A. And you brought this up, and I suspect you will appreciate this. LeBron James in a Lakers uniform, you could see how much it's Michael and Magic had a baby. You could see the Magic Johnson and LeBron really come out, 10-plus assists a game and all that stuff. But Stephen A., Magic Johnson's not shying away from a confrontation. Kawhi is coming for LeBron.
That's true.
LeBron did not answer the bell opening day. He did not answer the bell on Christmas. He's going to have to answer the bell for Kawhi Western Conference Finals.
I think LeBron is smart enough to know when to say when. And we've seen that in the playoffs. So regular season, I still think he's sizing up Kawhi in terms of what he can and what he can't do. Come playoff time, what we've seen time and time again,
he elevates.
There's a different LeBron James that shows up in the playoffs than what we've seen in the regular season. So he has the ability to study. He's very cerebral in terms of what he's looking at, how he positions. The one thing I still question, though, about the Lakers, which I think has always been, even when Magic was winning and Kareem was there and everything, people have always questioned the Lakers' toughness. And coming from an East Coast team, the Celtics, the Pistons, we always believe, like the 76ers, that if you play physical with a Showtime Laker team, that's how you get to them.
First Take, your take on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. Jason Fitz, what we're asking you, who's the best duo in NBA history? You can chime in, tweet us at Jason Fitz. You can also call 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. First Take, your take, brought to you by LinkedIn. Build your winning team today. Go to linkedin.com/sports. Mike in North Carolina, thanks for calling. We've heard a little bit of First Take. I want your take. Best duo in NBA history is?
My opinion, it would be Shaq and Kobe. Not due to Kobe being in the news, certainly lately, but I would just say if you took those two individuals, two-on-two against any other greats. If you took Michael and Scotty, surely I believe Kobe and Michael might can cancel each other out, but Scotty certainly isn't going to guard or be able to take Shaq on. I'd also say AD and LeBron James, I don't believe, could duo up against them. The only one that might be a trick there would be Magic and Kareem, but I think if it was a make-it-take-it situation and Kobe and Shaq had the ball, I don't know if they'd ever give it up.
I love the playground, like the playground analysis of any of these guys trying to cover Shaq. I mean, just the size difference is spectacular. Chris in Ohio, give us your take. Best duo in NBA history.
I'm going to have to go with Stockton Malone.
Woo!
And now,
I like
obviously,
that.
They didn't win the championships, but they played so well together. You know, they had the most, he had the number one most assists in the NBA, and Malone had number two scoring. Now, they couldn't beat Jordan and Pippen together, you know, on a 2-on-2 matchup. But you put Jordan with anybody, you know, that's going to be a great matchup.
Yeah, I mean, I love the fact that we're getting into the matchup conversation on it, too. I mean, I'm all in for that. All right, Dwayne in Maryland giving me what I thought was going to be the most popular answer to this. We're getting a little of this on Twitter. Dwayne, who you got? Who's the best duo in NBA history?
For my money, if I'm going to put money on it, it's going to be Jordan Pippen all day. But there's one, and I'm going to trip you up on this one. Duncan and Pop. Now, it's kind of like the NBA version of Brady and Belichick. They've won multiple NBA championships, and there was really like a rotating staff around Duncan. It really wasn't David Robinson. It was mostly Tim Duncan. So give me Duncan and Pop's brain, and I think that's at least in the top five.
You know what? It's my fault for not making the question clear when you start bringing in coaches. I'm all in for it, though. I love the insight there. Golic and Wingo going to be live Friday from Chicago for the NBA All-Star Game. I'll be out there. Brought to you by Marathon. No matter where your travels take you, Marathon can improve your engine performance with quality, top-tier gasoline. Marathon, fueling the American spirit. Now, question is, which duo is fueling the NBA today? All right, we're going to keep getting your calls on the best duo in history and your thoughts on it. But NBA analyst Scottie Pippen, who obviously is going to be on everybody's mind with our conversation today, sat down with Max and Stephen A., and they broke down the best duo in the NBA right now.
Who's the best tandem in the NBA right now, Scottie?
Well, I got to go with LeBron and AD. I think it's the most obvious. They're a very tough matchup. A lot different than myself than Michael, because they're more looked at as bigs, mm-hmm. and we were more looked at as perimeter guards. But they're truly dominating the game right now, and I think they're the toughest matchup for anybody, night in and night out.
I disagree, Scotty. I think the toughest duo is the one that most resembles you and Mike. I think Kawhi and Paul George are the toughest two when it matters most. I'm not talking about regular season games. I mean when it matters most. The history of the NBA is actually that the most valuable player you can have, when you look at the upper crust of the greatest, when you look at the greatest tandem, which was you and Mike, two-way players who are perimeter players. You say guards, I think of it more like guard forward, like two threes. If you have two-three types who can do everything, who can switch, who can guard multiple positions, who can shoot from the outside, hit their free throws, take it to the rack, hook up their teammates, play great defense. They're the most versatile. And when you have two guys like that, both operating on an MVP level, on a five-star level, not a four-star all-star, a five-star MVP level.
You think both of those players are playing at the MVP level?
I would say this. Paul George, before he got hurt, was one of the, was having a top five.
No, I'm talking right now, this season.
I'm anticipating that when the playoffs come, that's where they're going to be.
Let me say this to both of y'all. First of all, you and I agree. It's definitely LeBron and AD. They're two of the top five players on the planet. LeBron James walks around at 250. He's a locomotive coming at you. And Anthony Davis is just all world at 6'11". Now, there's some, you can compromise him with physicality, but in terms of his skill set and what he brings to the table, there's no denying it. Here's what I would say to you, because I love me some Paul George. I love Paul George, but we need to understand something here. 2013, 2014 was his coming out party. In that second Eastern Conference, you remember when he was in Indiana, they had back-to-back berths against Miami with LeBron, D. Wade, and those boys, all right? And they lost to them, all right? One time, you know, the second time around, he was averaging 22-7. His coming out party when he yanked it, that nasty dunk, and him and LeBron was going at each other, and they dapped one another and all of that other stuff. That was his coming out party. He had a nasty injury in the summer competition, getting ready to prep for the Olympics, and then obviously fell off a little bit before coming back on. He's been averaging like 28 in the postseason. But Paul George has not been out of the first round since 2013, 2014. Let's understand something here. We can look at Paul George and know that he's a star and incredibly appreciate what he brings to the table, along with Kawhi Leonard. But there's levels to this. And when you look at an Anthony Davis, I know that. When you look at an Anthony Davis, 6'11", shot blocking ability, rebounding ability, inside, outside. Even when he has a bad game, you look at a number and it's like 28 and
AD
as
a second banana.
AD with LeBron.
Better than Paul George as a second banana.
So you're trying to say Kawhi is ahead of LeBron?
No doubt. And also the prime. And also the combination of two-way attack wing players is too much.
But so at the end of the day, you have the Clippers coming out of the West. Stephen A., you're kind of on Clippers because they got Marcus Morris. You said they have more dogs now.
I'm not giving up on the Lakers, but I'm shaking it right now.
I got the Clippers coming out the West. I mean, the Lakers have yet to prove that they can beat the team they're sharing the building with.
That's fair.
And until I see that, then I'm not changing.
Bucks in the East?
Yeah, I like the Bucks in the East, but I'm not going to count Toronto out.
Yeah, watch
Toronto
this.
Toronto is a team that I think is going to surprise people.
I think Miami's going to surprise
people. Hey, Scotty, let's say Kawhi never left Toronto. Who gets out of the East? So this Toronto team that you're not counting out, plus Kawhi, who gets out of the
Toronto.
East?
I got to go with Toronto.
Me too. Now he's on the Clippers. We're all going with the Clippers, huh?
No.
Like, the,
well,
at a certain
I think
point,
that
people
the Clippers had already built a culture that we saw them, a team that to be
yeah,
dealt
they were
with
in the playoffs
in the
without
future.
Him, with, yes. without having so, both of them.
Listen, everybody wants to give it up to Kawhi. You act like, Max, we talking about Kawhi is not one of the top five players in the world. We know how great he is, but guess what? Even though he defends and he's an elite defender, offensively he scores. When you think about all the things that LeBron James brings to the table in terms of scoring, assist, what have you, and leading, and when you look at it, the fact that he has Anthony Davis, I'm saying we're about to find out.
Kawhi
I'm not coordinating Kawhi Leonard.
Kawhi has become an excellent passer, I just want to say. KD represented the balance of power in the NBA because OKC and the Warriors are both really good. Everyone gave it up for KD yeah. As the number one guy. Like a lot of people,
KD was
that.
Healthy. We would be having a
hold
conversation
on, hold
about
on.
Kawhi.
Why is it when Kawhi is the balance of power, wherever he goes, he's the Finals MVP? Kawhi don't get
well,
the same treatment.
If you want to look at it that way, you even acknowledge again. Listen. I didn't even need KD healthy last year. If Klay Thompson had never gotten hurt, I believe Golden State would have beat Toronto.
No
so my point
be Golden State.
No. I said without KD, I believe they would have beat Toronto. So my point is, you can sit up there and say that about Kawhi all you want to. I still got questions. We'll find out this year.
Scotty, real quick, hold on before we go. Is there any tandem right now that could challenge you and Michael?
No.
I mean, he just said it right there, but you guys don't all agree. Best duo in NBA history. Bob in New Hampshire, we've heard some first take. What's your take on the best duo in NBA history?
Hey, you know, before there was Scotty and Michael, and before there was Showtime, there was a real Showtime in Boston, Cousy and Russell.
I like the dip back there right there. I like that he went, you know, Bob in New Hampshire, obviously going with the Celtics. But come on, I like that. We've had a little bit of a history, too. Nola Runner comes in and says Moncrief and Johnson from the Bucks. I mean, we are dipping into the NBA history. Keep it coming. Who's the best duo in NBA history? I want you to tell me. When you tell me on Twitter, at Jason Fitz, don't just tell me who. Tell me why. I want to be able to tell everybody why you think what you think. Plus, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. That gets you in on the conversation. It's First Take, Your Take. I want your take on it. Coming up, we'll hear some of the First Take panel's thoughts on Joel Embiid. Can he actually be the best player on a championship team? Be a surprise what they had to say about that. It's First Take, Your Take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and SiriusXM, Channel 80, also on ESPN News. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. You guys are fired up today. I mean, some days you guys take a little bit. It takes a little bit to coax your take out of you. Not today. Woo! I mean, First Take in Chicago getting ready for the NBA All-Star Game. They had Scottie Pippen on, so it has led to the natural conversation they had that we've pulled forward. Who's the best duo in NBA history? Not talking about right now. I'm talking about of all time. And it is alarming how many different answers we are getting to this question. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Don't forget, if you're going to tell me who. You also have to tell me why. You can also tweet me at Jason Fitz. First Take, Your Take, brought to you by Shell, V-Power, Nitro Plus, Premium Gasoline. Steve in Orlando, we've heard a little of First Take. Steve, I want your take. Best duo in NBA history is...
I'm going to spice it up and give you Oscar Robertson and Lou Alcindor.
I mean, that's all right. That's a great why. Do you have a why on that one?
Because a young Lou Alcindor, I think, can handle AD no problem. He'll block his shot, and he's got that unstoppable hook shot.
I mean, I'm not. That just makes sense. I mean, you think that's the hardest part about this, because I even have to say for me, you know, as a life, I grew up a Lakers fan. I've been a Lakers fan my whole life. This argument, this discussion is difficult because I keep thinking about how stinking good those Bulls teams with Michael and Scotty. I mean, it was just, they were so good. It's just hard for me to separate that portion of it. I mean, I feel like even though my fandom wants to say Kobe and Shaq, I don't know that I can go against, you know, Scotty and Michael. But then again, you start talking about the greats and the legends, it goes to a whole nother level. Speaking of duos, there's a pretty good one in Philly with Embiid and Simmons. They obviously take everybody's attention with everything they do. The question is, can Joel Embiid be the best player on a championship-caliber team? Now, ESPN NBA analyst Scottie Pippen joined Max and Stephen A. to talk about Embiid and the ceiling on a championship team.
I do think that... Ben Simmons is probably the best player on the Philadelphia team because he does so much and he makes all the players better. He allow other players to flourish because of what he can do as a basketball player. A lot like LeBron. very dominant on the offensive end, a lot of downhill. Mm-hmm. He's one of those guys that when the floor is open, he will flourish. And when Embiid is in there, he does kind of hold Ben Simmons back a little bit because he doesn't have that space. But I do think those two players can exist together, okay, and they can win together. And obviously with a 25-2 record
the East?
At home, mm-hmm, they're proving that they can exist together.
Well, let me help y'all both out. Both of y'all are wrong. And here's the reason why. Because y'all ain't answering the question because Max switched it up. This is not a question of who's the best player on the Sixers. This is not a question as to whether or not Ben Simmons can be the best player. This was a specific question about Joel Embiid and not on the Sixers. Can he be the best player on the championship team? I would make the argument no. Because of the era we're living in. The game has changed. So because the game has changed, it's gotten a bit softer. It's more perimeter oriented. It's not about the big. Don't get me wrong. You need shot blocking. You need an interior presence. You need those things. I'm not trying to say that you don't. But the point is, when you have the ball in your hands, particularly if you can shoot the damn ball from beyond 15 feet on a consistent basis, if you are that guy, in most instances, if that's going to be the trick in today's game, the Greek Freak has us thinking somewhat differently, but we must understand why. His motor, his agility, his tenacity on both ends of the floor has everybody backing up from him going downhill. That's not Embiid. It never was Embiid in terms of that motor.
The error point, that's the difference. Scotty, I think the error point is right. That counts against Embiid, just the error. He's in the wrong era. But let me ask you something. If you designed a team around Embiid with like a Damian Lillard or, you know, players that space it the right way, he'd still maybe be the best player on the team. Maybe not Lillard, but Kemba Walker, someone. He'd still maybe be the best player on the team, and they could maybe win a championship. But that's not this team. I think the best player on this team is Simmons, and I think they need him to be the best to win the chip.
I agree with you, Max. In this area of the game, it's built more for the perimeter players. It's not designed for bigs now. Embiid is not a Shaquille O'Neal. Shaq was a dominant player. And it's a difference. It's a difference
between, so in other words, y'all agree
being
with me,
the best player and the most dominant player.
Right.
To me, Ben Simmons is the best player.
Okay.
But Embiid has not shown that he's a dominant player in our game.
Consistently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Consistently. But the point is that, once again, that's why I said the answer is no. Well, can Embiid be the best player on a championship team?
I could give you
the
a
answer
team.
Would
hold
be,
on, hold on.
No.
I could give you a team where you would agree Embiid's the best player on that team, and given the roster, they probably win the championship.
Give it to me.
Well, Bradley Beal better than Embiid?
No, you just said
okay,
you
right. I need to know your opinion. Is Bradley Beal better than Embiid?
Is Bradley Beal better than Embiid?
Probably not.
No.
If he's your two, and I go find you a one like that, guys who could space the floor, move the ball.
First take your take on ESPN News. Y'all are fired up about this as we've asked you who the best duo in NBA history is. I got more tweets than I can keep up with. We'll read a few of them in a second at Jason Fitz. In the meantime, I want to get a little phone action in here. I want your take. Remember, don't just tell me who. Tell me why. Let's go to Ivan in Pennsylvania. Ivan, thanks for calling the show. First take your take. What's your take on the best duo in NBA history?
You know what, to be honest with you, I think it's Steph and Clay. They changed the game of basketball. When those two are hot, they're unbeatable. I mean, for crying out loud, they went 73-9 together. That goes quite tough to take out when fully healthy.
Yeah, I'm surprised we're not getting more Steph and Clay. Thanks for the call. I'm surprised we're not getting more votes for them, but just because, as you mentioned, they changed the way the game is played. Modern basketball is different, largely because of their success, and there was a lot of it. Nino in Connecticut giving me one. I thought we'd get a little bit more of this, Nino. Who's your best duo in NBA history?
Well, I don't think they're getting enough love, and they played during the 80s. But for me, it would be Magic Johnson at 6'9", you know, being a point guard. It was kind of unheard of. He could play every position. And then also Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He had the sky hook that was no one could stop that. And I wish that we could have seen two Lakers tandems, Kobe and Shaq, versus them two in their primes. That would have been heaven.
Oh, man, I'm telling you, like, I'd be all in for the video game version of that. Keep the calls coming, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Love some of the original answers we're getting. Big J on Twitter says, Chauncey Billups and Rip Hamilton, one of the smartest players on the court, and Mr. Big Shot, one of the best bucket getters in the early 2000s. IT and Dumars have to be up there also. Can't imagine who he's a fan of. But getting a lot of votes for Michael and Scotty on Twitter. Russell and Cousy getting some more votes, so keep the votes coming. At Jason Fitz is how you get in on your thoughts on the best duo in NBA history. You can tweet me there also, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. We don't just have NBA stuff to discuss, though, today. The Astros spoke. What they said was a joke. We'll hear from what the panel thought. I'll give you some of my thoughts. That's all coming up.
Brought to you by Capital One. You know how it feels when you've saved enough for that long-awaited home addition? Now, imagine saving enough for an addition on that addition. That's the feeling with Capital One, where a new savings account earns 5 times the national average. Capital One is helping you earn more towards your savings goals. This is banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Capital One N.A., member FDIC.
If you missed the first hour of the show, go check out the entire thing on demand in the First Take Your Take podcast, brought to you by the Capital One Saver Card. Earn 4% cash back on dining and entertainment, 2% at grocery stores, and 1% on all other purchases. What's in your wallet? Now we're having the conversation today because First Take was in Chicago, where Golic and Wingo and First Take will both be in this show tomorrow. I'll be in Chicago for the All-Star Game. The question we've been asking you, who's the best duo in NBA history? You can give us your take, 888-SAY-ESPN. You can also tweet me, 888-729-3776. You can also tweet me at Jason Fitz. And we're getting a lot of conversation about different duos. Kathy says, I think Larry Bird and Kevin McHale should be considered. They managed to limit the Lakers throughout the decade. I'm surprised we haven't seen more votes for that. Getting a lot of Jordan and Pippen votes throughout the course of it. I do love David, though, coming in and say Muggsy Bogues and Manute Bol. I mean, come on, give me the tall and the short. I like creativity. I'm just saying. Also, the white man can't jump answer was spectacular. First Take Your Take, brought to you by Indeed, used by over 3 million businesses for hiring. Post a job at Indeed.com/hire. In my mind, the Astros owner, Jim Crane, should be posting for a new job. Like, he should no longer get to own the Astros. Today, there was an abysmal, awful, terrible press conference. I can't say enough things about what the Astros did today, but I'll let you hear a little of what Jim Crane and star third baseman Alex Bregman said today.
MLB also acknowledged that the players should not be punished for the failure of our leadership. The leaders enabled, condoned, and did not stop those actions that happened. I also agree that our players should not be punished for these actions. These are a great group of guys who did not receive proper guidance from their leaders. We cannot change the actions of the past, but we are fully committed and moving forward in the right way.
I am really sorry about the choices that were made by my team, by the organization, and by me. I've learned from this, and I hope to regain the trust of baseball fans.
First Take Your Take, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests on the Shell Penzo Performance Line. You've heard what they had to say. Now, hear what Stephen A. and Max had to say about the Astros.
I understand the players getting off in terms of immunity. Mm-hmm. It's important that the world knows and that the world ultimately learned what they did. So if you had to grant immunity in order to make sure that we all became aware of this scandal, what exactly they were doing with the sign stealing scandal, fine. But let's understand something. That doesn't mean you should be acknowledged as champions. It doesn't mean you shouldn't be stripped of your World Series crown. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't be excoriated and sullied for arguably the rest of your career for what you did. Now, you could keep your check. You understand? You could keep getting paid. But that's about it. That championship trophy that's in Houston is bogus. They're not champions. Now, I'm not saying the Yankees are champions or the Dodgers are champions, but y'all behinds ain't no damn champions. You're cheaters. That's really what this comes down to. Now, Max, let me give you the 7-game series, because in fairness to you, you didn't have the numbers in front of you. I do. Game one. These are the Bronx Bombers, y'all. The Bronx Bombers smacking home runs all over the place, all right? Games 3, 4, and 5 in Yankee Stadium, they scored 8 runs, 6 runs, and 5 runs. Max, do you know all 4 games in Houston, games one and two, they scored one run. They came back for game six, scored one run. They came for game seven. Game seven, New York Yankees, ALCS, zero.
Yeah.
4-0. Suddenly you can't score. Why? Because the pitchers are being alerted. You know, and you know, the pitchers and the kids, they're working out a scheme because they got
the
technology
time
in the outfield. Okay. Telling you, you understand what pitches to look for as batters for the Houston Astros.
First, take your take on ESPN Radio. I just went out to my Instagram at Jason Fitch. You can see a little of what I had to say about this earlier. The Astros had months to prepare their statement. They had months to get this right. And Jim Crane, their owner, stood up in front of all of us and presumed that we're not smart enough to ask basic questions. Jim Crane came out in front of all of us today. He somehow managed to find a few people to blame, but not himself. He took no ownership of himself, and he asked us to move forward without any explanation of what happened in the past. He asked for forgiveness without any explanation of how we got there. And he asks us to believe that it won't happen again under his watch without ever explaining how it happened in the first place. I could not be angrier at the Houston Astros than I am right now. Remember that there was an actual monitor installed into the dugout that they were looking at. So somehow the owner of the organization that's in that stadium and around that team all the time just didn't know and now wants us to believe that it won't happen again. What we saw today were absolutely empty apologies. Empty apologies based on the premise of I'm going to say I'm sorry loud enough that you'll stop asking questions and simply forgive me. I hope that doesn't happen. I have never once sat back and been more excited for a lawsuit than I am for the lawsuit right now civilly that the Astros are facing. My hope is that somehow it pushes to court because it will force answers. I would have given the Astros every opportunity to come out and simply say, you know what? We did this wrong. Here's what we did. Here's how it happened. And here's what we need to do better. If they had come out and been transparent, honest, and owned their issues, then maybe we could all look at it and move forward. But if they're going to come out with a blanket and empty apology with zero details and zero interest in actually answering specific questions, then I hope they are forced in a court of law to answer the questions in a way that absolutely destroys the future of the organization. I hope that for years they are dealing with the fallout from this because today, after months of preparing, they thought we didn't deserve honesty. Shame on you, Houston Astros. First Take, your take on ESPN Radio. That's my take. I don't get a lot of chances to get my take in, but I had to go off. So thanks for letting me get that off my chest. In the meantime, we'll keep taking your thoughts on the best duo in NBA history. Plus, is Giannis Antetokounmpo the best player in the world? Surprising answer came. You'll hear it next.